This is Ginger Garris, and my interviewee is Don Garris. Today's date is July 23rd, 1994. The location of the interview is in Rainbow City, Alabama. When and where were you born?
I was born April the 25th, 1940, in Sylacauga, Alabama.
What are your earliest memories of World War II?
Of course, I was, when the U.S. got into the war, I was just a baby. And so I remember nothing about that. But as I was growing up, I can remember my family talking about the war, and had uncles. I remember one of my uncles was in the Navy, and then talking about that. And I can remember ration stamps. And the main thing I remember is you couldn't buy but so much sugar. And you had to have ration stamps to buy sugar and automobile tires. My dad, now he worked in a war industry, so he was allowed to have an automobile and could get rations. Well, anybody could have an automobile, but to buy the tires and the gasoline, you had to have ration stamps. And so he was able to drive a car, and I remember the family talking about that. And I can, the big event that I can really remember well is when, I believe it was when Japan surrendered. I'm not sure if it was that or if it was victory in Europe, but there was all of a sudden I hear automobile horns all over the neighborhood I live in. People blowing horns and everyone excited, and members of the family begin to ask what's happening, and they say, well, somebody just heard on the radio that the war is over. And so everybody, and I also remember, you couldn't miss it, because we, Sylacauga's cotton mill town, and the Avondale Mills had a whistle that blew at shift change and blew at various times, and that horn, that whistle, they just started blowing continuously, announcing that the war was over. So it was just, you know, I was just a child, but it was very exciting at that time.
You were only 5 years old when the war ended, but how did things change after the war?
Of course, I was just a youngster, but I can still remember everybody real excited about the war being over. They felt great about the country themselves, and they had been a lot of money saved. You know, our family saved a lot of money because there was nothing to buy. So they were interested in buying things. Really, I think the first thing that my family was interested in buying was a washing machine. I remember my mother washing clothes during the Second World War on in a tub with a scrub board and a pot where the water was boiled in the backyard. So this was a real big important thing to the family. I can remember we had outdoor outhouse. We did not have an indoor bath, and that was one of the first things that my family wanted to do, was build a on the back porch an indoor bath, and they did it. So there was just a lot of excitement about buying stuff, doing new things during that era. I don't remember the specific years, but during those years, say when I was 6 and 10 years old, we were just always buying all kind of things. It felt like we were very prosperous. We thought we were rich. My family made me feel like we were rich, and they wanted to buy things for their children too. That's the main way things changed after the Second World War that I can remember.
Tell me a little about your school and the other schools in Sylacauga.
I attended B.B. Comer Memorial School in Sylacauga. That started the first grade and went through 12 years of school. I went all 12 years there. I started school in 1946. This was the county school. Sylacauga also had a city school, Sylacauga High School. When I went to school, schools were segregated. So there was also a black school where all the black students went to in Sylacauga. But I wasn't really familiar with the black school. Like I say, I went to from the 1st to the 12th grade at B.B. Comer, and during that entire time, schools were segregated in Alabama. I believe that close to my last year of high school, that was about 1957, the Little Rock school desegregation took place. That's the first I can remember of schools being becoming integrated in the South. I only know of that because I saw the reports on TV, and I'm sure I read about it in the newspaper. But that's pretty well the schools in Sylacauga and how they existed during the entire time that I went to school there. My later school experience was I started to Jacksonville. After I finished high school and went one semester, and I joined the National Guard unit there in Jacksonville, which was an engineer unit. And so the requirement was that I go off for 6 months of active duty. So I dropped out of school and went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, where I was served the entire 6 months. And that's when I first got my introduction to integrated facilities. The military was completely integrated. And so I served I was an enlisted man in the same barracks and used all the same facilities as the black enlisted men who were in my unit. And so I got an introduction to a new lifestyle which I had never been used to before. Jacksonville at that time was not an integrated school. It was still segregated. I came back from that experience in the military to Jacksonville, and completed 4 years of study there, which I got a degree in business administration with a major in accounting. And also, I went through the advanced ROTC program and received a commission, so I had another military obligation. When I finished at Jacksonville, I could not immediately go for my basic school. I was a quartermaster officer, commissioned in the quartermaster corps. And so I had a period of time when I needed to work, and I took a job with the government accounting office, general accounting office of the government, which was real interesting. I only worked for them for about 3 months during that interim period between getting out of school and going to my quartermaster school. But it was very interesting in that that was the time that the space program, that was in 63, 64, the space program was really booming, and there was a lot of money being spent on it. And my assignment during that whole time was to the NASA program in Huntsville. And a real interesting thing, seeing this on TV, makes me recall. I didn't realize how important it was then, but I was a good part of the time I was just reading contracts that NASA had entered into with various contractors, and we were I was supposed to be looking to see that they were complying with the regulations. The government accounting office does audit the various monies that are spent by government. And I was reading contracts like so many other people were there that worked for the governmental accounting office to see that it complied with the regulations, what was required in contracts. And I remember reading a contract, I don't remember any parties involved, but a contract which was for the study of how the moon landing, how the trip was to proceed, whether or not it was to be a one rocket shoot directly to the moon, or whether it was to orbit the Earth and then shoot to the moon. And of course, it didn't have as much significance to me as it does now as I see the news reports, but it's real interesting now that I did play a part in that, but a very small part, but a part in it. Was at least aware of it. But for after serving there for only about 3 months, my scheduled time for the quartermaster school at Fort Lee, Virginia, opened up, and I went to Fort Lee, Virginia, to the quartermaster school and completed it. And then after taking a little leave, I was ordered to go to Korea to as part of the American forces in Korea. After, like I said, taking a little leave time, I took a bus out to Oakland, California, where I was to catch a military aircraft over to Korea. It was, I think they call it MATS, Military Air Transport. When I went in to take the flight, after finding out all the information the day before, I went in to get the flight. I remember the flight being delayed. They're having mechanical problems with the plane. And that just went on for, seemed like it was 7 or 8 hours we stayed at that airport before they finally decided that they were going to allow it to take off.